What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station this Wednesday on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Yeah, Friday. What's up? Welcome in. It's August 15th, 2025, and you are listening to The Fan. Grant Paulson, Danny Ruye, taking you up to 6:15 tonight, and pregame ahead of the Nats and the Phillies. Nationals playing spoiler last night.
That was a fun one.
Brad Lord on the hill, beating Philadelphia. They'll try to make it two in a row with Grant and Danny regular. Mackenzie Gore on the bump at Nationals Park tonight. We also have two preseason football games. Danny, happy week two in the NFL preseason.
Day or something.
Day.
Yeah, man, it's almost here. I mean, we did the long national nightmare of months and months and months with just sort of lists and made-up topics and countdowns and, hey, this guy's not at OTAs, and we do the annual dance. This is now, the business of this season is here. And that's kind of a theme. Cliff Kingsbury spoke. We'll talk about that, I'm sure. But we are now counting down to regular season football and kind of the most meaningful thing on the sports calendar.
Titans-Falcons tonight. Do we know, is Cam Ward playing in that game? I would imagine he would. I'm looking forward to seeing him again, the number one overall pick. There's never been less attention paid to or excitement, seemingly nationally, about a number one overall pick who should have a very good first season. And then in the Falcons' case, we did not see their quarterbacks at all in their first preseason game. So I'm curious to see if there's a Michael Penix cameo tonight, if Kirk Cousins gets back on the field first time since his benching and his injury last year. And then in the nightcap, late this evening, 10 o'clock East time. This is late night preseason football.
Gotta want it.
The way it got drawn up, Chiefs and Seahawks, Patrick Mahomes and Kansas City's first team O almost always plays for Andy Reid. But you get one more opportunity if you're one of these teams. A lot of these clubs are putting in good work this week in joint practices, so maybe you tamp down how much your players are going to play. But Washington's not one of those teams this week. They don't have a joint practice, so they play Monday night at home, the first of two exhibition tilts at Northwest Stadium, and they're taking on the Bengals, and Cincinnati made it very clear last week as they completely adjust their August paradigm that they're going to play their starters considerably. I would think we're going to get at least a quarter of Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase and some of the Bengals' star offense against Washington's top defense, which is going to be a great look-see. Yesterday, Dan Quinn, when announcing that there wasn't going to be a joint workout with the Ravens, suggested that it's not going to change much about how they go about employing players against the Bengals on Monday night. But he did say some starters will play some snaps. That was as much as he was willing to
tell. That clears that right up for me. I don't have any further questions. Yeah, I mean, you'd wonder if the plan would change. I'd like to think it would or it should. And again, I'm not ripping Dan Quinn at all. He doesn't know us a thorough, you know, how many plays everyone's going to play at this stage. He's under no requirements to do so. But something you were counting on was taken away. So wouldn't you adjust accordingly? That's how I would do it, certainly. Basically, it's not quite a month, but it's three full weeks. And if someone gets injured, that's awful and it sucks and it's the worst. But it's three full weeks until you play the real one. You're not playing in week number three, understandably so, on short rest. It's 5 days. I never knew how that joint practice was going to work anyway, but that's been taken away from you. Maybe go against an opponent that's probably, fortunately for you, going to play their starters way more than the average bear because of what they've been through the start of the seasons the last several years.
I think that's exactly what's going to happen. Not only because the Bengals are going to be employing starters more than most teams do, just because they've gone 1-11 in the first couple of weeks over the last 3 years.
And that's not hyperbolic, by the way. Those are the numbers.
No, it's really, really ugly for them how they've begun. And they said, not anymore. Not this time. We're going to take August more seriously. And because of that, we'll be better prepared for the first couple of weeks of the season in September than anybody else. I would not want to be the Browns in week one. I think the Bengals are probably going to put one on them. That having been said, I think that's one reason why for Dan Quinn, you probably run your guys out there a ton, but more than even maybe you would because of this lack of a joint practice. I think if the knob was going to be turned up to 5, now you just turn it up to 6. A little bit more work, perhaps. I don't think it's going to mean everybody does that. Bobby Wagner, Zach Ertz probably not going to play a lot. I don't think Jaden Daniels is going to play a lot. But especially on defense with some of the young DBs or some of the guys in the linebacking core up front, I would like to see them If you can get some really good work against the Bengals in a game setting, what a benefit that is.
You would think,
right? To having to go take on the Giants in a couple of weeks in week one. It's funny, though. You said he doesn't owe us anything, and it's so true. I am a huge proponent of coaches not providing a lot of information in the season. I know it drives people crazy. Maybe it's my background being on the beat or being a reporter or whatever, but I'll never be bothered by a coach playing coy with information. I think it's overdone and unnecessary largely, but I totally understand it and I'm cool with it. In the preseason, I can't get there with you. Like, what on earth is there that's keeping you from just giving us the blueprint here? It doesn't have to be this far out, perhaps, but coaches don't do it, period. Like, the day before a preseason game, if you're talking to a coach, they will not tell you who's in and for how much, and it's cloak and dagger, and you got to get there early in the press box with your binoculars and see who's running sprints before the game, and that's probably who's not going to play. You just can't convince me there's a good reason to do it that way in a preseason game.
Because the only thing I could think of is you wonder if I'm making this up, but you would tell Laremy Tunsil, you're going today. Get ready to go. And you do the ramp up and you do the regular pregame warm up. And that's all you wanted him to do was to, for whatever reason, go through that exercise. And you can quietly come over and tap him. Okay, buddy, you're actually not going today. We just wanted you to do that. And you, if it got out earlier than that, you'd spoil it.
But guys,
but that's such an extreme scenario. Like, what? Come on, man.
And guys, no. That's, to me, like the mini camp thing where you don't practice the last day. You go to the movie theater or the bowling alley. When you do it five straight years, it's just what you do. All right, guys, we're not going to practice tomorrow. Everyone's going to play video games at Uncle Frank's house. And it's like, we knew this was coming.
Yeah,
right?
We're so surprised.
So if that's always what you do with your starters, but also, these are professionals. You don't need to lie to them.
Mm-hmm.
Laremy Tunsil doesn't think he's doesn't need to think he's going to play to go through a pregame routine at 100%. You just tell him, hey, the work we want you to get in is we're going to do everything in pregame until an hour before kickoff, as if it's a Sunday at 1, and then we'll shut it down. You guys can shower and throw your street clothes on and get on the sideline.
Yeah, 10-30-yard sprints and then go shower up, yeah.
Let's talk Cliff Kingsbury. The offensive coordinator said the quiet part out loud today, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
He did not do it in a way that was overly incendiary. I don't think Cliff Kingsbury said anything that is going to create a whole lot of drama. But he just went further down the path of a team official telling Terry McLaurin, come to work, than anybody else has. The tone with Dan Quinn, when McLaurin comes up at a press conference, is he's got an ankle injury, and he's hitting all his markers, and we can't wait to see him again, and I just love coaching Terry, and he's the best guy there's ever been. Terry's our guy. And that's kind of been the tone the entire way, which is perfectly fine. No problem with that. He's playing chess. Kingsbury was playing checkers today, though, whereas he was asked a couple different questions that were, frankly, really, really easy questions for him to just pump everybody's tires. I think the first one John Keim asked him from ESPN was something along the lines of, what can you get done with Terry in the meeting rooms that is going to make it more okay that he's not on the practice field? Almost leading you to give a good quote on, hey, I know he's not practicing, guys, but he's in the rooms. We're having meetings. Him and Jaden are on the same page. Me and him are talking every night. This is going to be fine. He chose not to do that. He chose to kind of say, well, look, the meetings are very different. I need him playing on the field. I need him practicing. Second question was, again, very, very similar, which was, you know, the juxtaposition of just being in the meetings versus the field. And he circles back to actually saying it is time for these guys. He was vague, but the question was about McLaurin. These guys who can to start practicing. Well, who's he talking about exactly? But I want to let people hear these clips and then we'll react in case you missed this. But this is a little bit off message. Is that a fair thing to say?
Yeah. Well, this is a new frontier. Right, in terms of messaging.
I guess that's the big question, and when we take calls on this later in the show, maybe that can be what we ask, is did Cliff Kingsbury, who's just exceedingly honest and has no real interest in hiding things under the sleeve, did he just answer a question honestly and kind of go rogue a little bit here, or is this the beginning of a shift in tone from the organization? When Quinn speaks tomorrow, does what he say sound anything like this? Peters doesn't talk right now. He did his presser before the year began, and at that time he said McLaurin, we think, is going to show up on time, and then obviously he didn't. But Like, he was very positive, very pro-Terry. Everything he should have said, he was perfect.
Right.
But this is the first time anybody has said anything other than, like, me handing them a script to make Terry feel good when he reads the transcript. And I just wonder, is it a shift or is it Cliff kind of going out on a limb and doing his own thing? So let's play the first cut here of Kingsbury on the season prep McLaurin can get in meetings, answering that he needs to be on the field.
Yeah, I think, you know, not as much as we would if he was full go, there's no doubt. But I think, like I said, I'm huge on walkthroughs, on practice, things like that, because until you get on the grass and actually do it and feel the timing and feel the depths of routes and things of that nature, I don't know exactly how much you can get out of that. So I think we're kind of at that point to where we need to start getting those guys when they're available out there and gelling and seeing what we are as an offense.
That was the big answer, the big cut.
Uh-huh.
I think we're kind of at that point. Bold and highlight.
That's, I mean, different words, but same summary from what I said yesterday. I mean, this is where we are now. I understand the future business is not going how you'd like it to go. The current business, right now, the NFL football season, it's here. It's upon us. Now's the time to get to work. I think this pulse only starts to grow. Where, everyone understands. There's a full, eyes wide open, comprehensive understanding of how this process has gone and is going, etc. The thing that is now in conflict to that is the current business of the NFL season, where you're under contract, the team needs you, the coach is now saying, yeah, okay, thank you for everything you're doing, and I get it, I support you, but it'd be a lot better if you were here. And that pulse grows the closer we get to the season.
A lot of words, right? 27 seconds worth of them in that answer. But there's one specific phrase, I think, that particularly mattered, which was, I think we're kind of at that point. And then he goes on to say, to where we need to start getting these guys, when they're available, out there and gelling to see where we are as an offense. Translation, the offensive coordinator's going, got to get the camaraderie, got to get everybody on the same page. Our offense is hurt right now, and we're not as good because guys aren't out there. If you're ready, need you to start practicing. And by the way, not coincidentally, the question was not about injured players. The question was about Terry McLaurin and him being able to sit in on meetings but not practice. He expounded upon the idea of being on the grass, as he calls it, just being so much more important and more relevant, more significant in the ramp up than sitting in a room with the lights off, you know, watching the projector.
Yeah, I mean, there hasn't been a ton of contact with him. You know, he's been here, but he's been working with the trainers. So until he gets back on the grass, that's when we'll start building that back up.
At that point, what can you do at that point to make sure it doesn't take a long time?
Yeah, I think, you know, that's one of those deals. It's just time on task. And luckily, they had last year to build a lot of rapport and chemistry. And Terry understands our system going into a year or two. So that should expedite the process. But to me, it's time on task together on the grass is really the only way that you can continue to build.
So I saw the way that a lot of the national guys were talking about this, because these comments immediately went viral to use internet parlance. I saw NFL Network guys, ESPN's Adam Schefter, others were immediately commenting on this. And they phrased it as, they basically put it out there as, here we are. It's about that time. The Commanders are now pushing Terry McLaurin to get back on the field. I don't think this was strategic or planned or good cop, bad cop. I don't get the sense Dan Quinn said, hey, Cliffy, tomorrow's your press conference.
Make sure you slip something
in
there.
Let's put a little heat on. I do not think that happened at all. Okay. I think Kingsbury is just a really honest guy. By the way, understandably, everybody's role is a little different. He's the coordinator of the offense. His job is to move the football and score points. You can make the case from a sheer coaching staff standpoint, nobody's more affected by what Terry McLaurin is doing than Cliff Kingsbury. So it stands to reason he might be more annoyed or frustrated than even Dan Quinn, who's got to play the personalities and kind of manage people. Cliff Kingsbury is holding a play sheet, calling plays into a headset, trying to get the ball across the goal line. That is his goal. And there's some people pleasing and relationship building that's got to be done there too. But I view this as essentially, if I'm going to phrase it in a way that's overstated to make the point, shift in tone or Cliff Kingsbury going rogue, I think he went rogue. I think he just made a comment. I don't think the organizational tone today is in a new place.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't think there was a meeting of a cabal of, you know, well-informed folks, and they said, okay, today's the day. We're going to lay the first salvo. Cliff Kingsbury, you drop this nugget, and then we'll wait 3 days, and then the next one will be, I don't know, Joe Witt will say something. Like, I don't think that's what happened at all, but I also think that's the feeling. You see what I'm saying? Like, I think it's important.
Definitely a window into, if that's what he's willing to say here, what is he saying behind the scenes to either Terry, although it sounds like he made it sound like they're not talking much, or to Peters and Quinn?
Right. I mean, to me, the essential big point is this is now how the staff feels, right? Where it's time, man. It's right now. The football season is happening right now, and we need you. It's very, very important. Your personal thing is your personal thing. The team thing is happening. It is too critical right now. Again, especially without your, it's too late to play against Cincinnati. Probably too late to play against Baltimore. You wouldn't play against Baltimore anyway. And no joint practices. Like, it's time. Like, we need you here right now for the business of this season. And that's kind of the essential takeaway to me.
I view it as a gentle nudge to McLaurin by Kingsbury in a way that was not traumatic or overly problematic.
You're not calling some guy out
But it was a little bit of a nudge, an acknowledgement. Mm-hmm. And I actually loved it. I thought it was beyond time for that, frankly, because someone needs to do it. And I get the position Quinn's in. You wear different hats at different times, and I don't know that he's the right guy to do it. I think as time goes on, inevitably, he's going to have to say something harder and stronger than what Kingsbury did today about getting Terry back. Maybe he feels like we're not there yet. But as we talked about yesterday, even though I have kind of squarely been in the middle here, I think the team is more right than the player. I don't think this was worth it to kind of bring this on yourselves as an organization. I really like Kingsbury saying this because McLaurin owes them a year.
Mm-hmm.
You owe me a season. I am all for the hold out, the hold in, the get paid, player empowerment. I'm giving it to you. No problem. But you get a certain amount of time to say your piece, and then eventually you got to go to your room. I gave you 5 minutes to yell at me and tell me what a bad dad I am and why you should be able to go out to the party. And I took it. I wore it. I listened. I took it all in. Now go upstairs and close the door. You're grounded. And for me, today was kind of the, like, come on, man. So the holding out, the holding in, the trying to get paid, I'm on your team. But that's for your future contract.
Right.
You still owe me this year.
Yeah, the current one that you're under.
Tap my watch.
It's binding.
It's time.
Here we go.
So I'm not at a point yet where I think he's doing irreparable damage to the relationship or even to their chances to beat the Giants. But I certainly love that now somebody has stepped up to that podium and nudged him a little bit. And I would turn up the heat on that. I'd love to see Quinn join the party soon.
I wonder how he'll handle it. I mean, that to me is the whatever dollar amount you want to put on it question.
He's just so likable and so amicable and so player friendly.
And that's his thing, is to not cause waves and ruffle feathers. I mean, the sternest stuff he'll say is the standard is the standard without calling anybody out specifically.
I don't remember him, and what he does behind the scenes is very different.
Totally, of course.
He could have a meeting in his office, and I'm sure he has, where he might read the riot act to a guy or Terry McLaurin or whatever. But I'm talking about at the podium, publicly with what we see, because that's really what matters if we're being honest.
Totally.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. We'll let you guys weigh in on Cliff Kingsbury later in the show. Which NFL team do you find the hardest to project this year? There is a club that I waffled on constantly in the last 2 weeks as I've been putting my season predictions together. And I don't even think it's my fault. I think it's their health and their fault. But I find them to be the most complicated team to prognosticate. And I want to see if you agree, and I want to see what your team is, Danny. We'll do that next, right here on The Fan.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station this Wednesday on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Grant and Danny on this Friday, welcoming you back on The Fan. Camp coverage presented by 106.7 The Fan's friend, Paul Henry's Window Installation. PaulHenrysWindows.com, your clear home improvement choice. The team I'm having the hardest time figuring out this preseason, I think I'm going to change them out of my division champion predicted club from their group of teams, and I'm going to move them into maybe a non-playoff bracket, wild card bracket. The LA Rams. This Matt Stafford situation at quarterback is
a
big problem, in my opinion. To say concerning is probably not doing it enough justice. Is anybody monitoring this right now? So he has yet to do anything, since a back procedure. The clock continues to tick. They say now that he's going to work out tomorrow on Saturday for the first time. Last weekend, Sean McVay said he was supposed to start practicing on Monday. It's Friday. But he had a procedure done on his back. They're like hooking him up to these weird gadgets and devices now to try to make his back feel better. It's August 15th. I'm supposed to believe that he can get through 17 games in 18 weeks, getting crunched and hit and battered and bruised. This is the easy part. This is the offseason. I now have major worries about Matthew Stafford's health. And if the Rams don't have Matthew Stafford, then the team that I thought was going to win the NFC West can't do that. And all of a sudden, I'm starting to look at San Francisco again. You know, I've been beating up on the Niners. I have been a big proponent of their offseason not having been perfect and some of the ebbs and the flows of some frustrated players and new contracts and guys that have left and putting more on Brock Purdy's plate. But did you know, so I heard this stat this week as I was kind of trying to convince myself San Francisco could still be really good. They play seven of the teams that drafted in the top 10 this year in the NFL. San Fran does. Seven games against teams that drafted in the top 10. So between schedule and a coach that I love in Kyle Shanahan to get the most out of his weaponry on offense, and then what's going on with Matthew Stafford, I am rethinking who I've got winning the West, and I'm ready to label the LA Rams, because of this Stafford situation with the back, the hardest team to get a hold on right now as we are 3 weeks from the start of the season.
Now, if he plays the whole year, it's a different animal, but how can anyone count on that at this point?
If he plays 15, 16 games,
right,
they win double-digit games, they're definitely a playoff team. Now, remind everyone, too, I guess, of like what kind of quarterback we're talking about. No one list is important, but we've got Mike Sando on at 5. He did the QB ranking for The Athletic, where he talks to 50 executives, coaches, people in football. They had Matthew Stafford 5th behind the Big Four, directly ahead of Jaden Daniels in that ranking. Whether you agree with that or not is fine. My point is, this is a championship-level QB who recently led this team to a Super Bowl, who is a Hall of Famer. So if he's there, it's very, very different than if he's not and you're starting Stetson Bennett or whoever it might be.
Well, each of the last 2 years, the Rams have been on that Bengals plan. They started 3-6 2 years ago, 1-4 last year. And you can see that they're not concerned about September. They don't. McVay and company don't care when you've got a veteran quarterback like Stafford, and Nakua's constantly injured. Kupp was injured all the time before him.
Who cares less about the preseason than Sean McVay?
Nobody. I mean, and this is their MO. And yeah, the point is, by the end of the year, we'll be playing better football than anybody. They gave Philadelphia the best punch last year. And if it's not for the snow, who knows how that game goes. Now, Philadelphia was affected by it too, handled it better than the Rams did. But they were a tough, tough out. That was the case 2 years ago. Was the case last year, where I think they ripped off, what was it? It was like 9-3 down the stretch as they, you know, were ripping people. They beat Buffalo one of the games of the year, a fluky loss that I don't think they needed at the end of the season. But they were really, really good after that terrible start. And that may be what we're looking at now, whereas we'll say we're going to ease Matt Stafford into this thing. We need him for November and December and maybe January and hope to get away with it. But I'm with you. That whole division to me is really tough to nail down. I don't have a great feel for anybody in the NFC West.
Yeah, there's actually a way to bet on FanDuel that I've been looking at where you can kind of bet on order of finish. I think there's good value, not in picking 1-4. That's almost impossible. But in finding a team and picking them as to where they're going to finish. But you're right. If you're looking at the division that might be the most complicated to line up 1-4, might be the NFC West.
I think it is.
Rams and 49ers, both with chances to win it. People forget that Seattle was a real tough customer last year, year two of their program. I don't know if people get that in the first half of last year, they were awful defensively. And in the second half of last year, they played at almost a top five level, which was, I think, a McDonald's stable coming over there. as someone who's going to be one of the next great coaches defensively in the NFL. I think they're probably a 9-ish, 10-ish win team. Do you have an issue with that with Seattle?
I mean, they always are.
It's going to depend on Sam Darnold maybe in that offensive line.
Yeah, I think they're a low ceiling, high floor. Fine. Like their first team all okay. Whether it's 8, 9, 10 wins is kind of how it breaks. But look at that whole division. We haven't even gotten Arizona yet. 8 and 9 last year. I know Washington took them to the woodshed, but they're very okay.
Yes.
Like that whole division, San Francisco's over-under is 10.5 among the elites in the sport. Now, they might get there, and every one of these warning signs is just, you know, I don't know, much ado about nothing. But the warning signs to me are very real. And you're counting on Christian McCaffrey to be healthy. But I feel like that ship has sailed on that. Ayuk is banged up. There's a number of injuries. You mentioned some of the disputes. It just sort of feels like a crumbling and a falling apart of an era of a team that had a Super Bowl window for half a decade. And it feels like maybe that window was closed and no one's acknowledging it yet. But then I could also see them winning 11 games because the rest of the division is, you know, burning to hell. I mean, I have no idea.
I'm going to read a quick excerpt from this ESPN story on his injury. And this is, you know, where I start to get a little bit worried. So, again, the idea was he was supposed to practice on Monday. This is after it got pushed back before to this week. But Monday he'd be back. They'd have a jog through Wednesday. They'd have this joint practice on Thursday, yesterday. And he was going to get a bunch of work that he really needed to get ready for the season. And by the way, they take those very seriously. They don't take preseason games seriously. Mm. But because of that, they really do put a lot into the joint practices. He obviously did not take the field. McVay said after the Rams joint practice with the Saints on Thursday that the workout on Saturday that he's going to have tomorrow will be similar to the previous week, that like the plan that he had gone through. Hopefully his back responds a little bit better. What he means by that is, so last Saturday, almost a week ago, he threw 68 passes in a workout at the Rams team facility by himself just out on the field. No limitations in terms of the types of throws he could make. The next step, McVay said that evening, was to take part in individual drills during practice, which was supposed to have been 2 days later. The problem is that while he felt good right after, he didn't feel good enough, I guess, within 24 hours. Mm. So 2 days later, he was unable to throw. So this 37-year-old quarterback with a bad back, who had a procedure, who's getting hooked up to weird machines I've never seen before, and like they're like plugging him in like a battery so that he can have something inserted into his back like my pregnant wife before she gives birth. He threw 68 passes, and then 2 days later did not feel well enough to throw the football again. And it's August. And I'm just supposed to go, yeah, I hear you. But he'll play 17 games in 18 weeks, and they'll win the division. Sound the alarm bells. So, Danny, the Rams have become the team I don't know what to do with.
That's as good as any. I mean, there are a few candidates. Again, we went through it just now. The NFC West, to me, is a cloudy, shrouded mystery box. I have no idea.
Give me a team you can't properly predict outside of the West.
The Atlanta Falcons in that weird division where Tampa's the best team in that division. And my response is, so? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know how good Tampa is. I think they're solid. I think they're outside of that tier of Philadelphia, Detroit, you know, maybe Washington, Minnesota, et cetera, kind of the royalty of the NFC at this point. But they're frisky. They're still good. Baker Mayfield now on offensive coordinator number 3 down there in Tampa. But go to Atlanta specifically. What was missing over the last several years was any kind of pass rush, any kind of ability to play some defense. Really good skill players. There are players, pieces there that I'm excited about, that I like. I just don't know, A, about Penix. I love him, by the way. That was my, I guess, number 4 quarterback last year, which doesn't sound like much, but in a quarterback-rich year, that's pretty damn good. He'd have been my number 1 this year, by the way, just for the record. But I don't know if they've got enough defensively. I don't know if that division's bad enough or it won't matter. I don't know if Tampa runs away with it or not. They're over under 7.5, which doesn't sound like an awful lot when you look at some of the other teams that are in that same ballpark, GP. Like, you think of Jacksonville's got an over under 7.5. Miami does too. The Colts do. They're not terribly well thought of, but I could absolutely see a 9+ win team. I could also see the bottom falling out, and Penix doesn't work. Cousins doesn't work. Nothing works there. Their defense is still terrible, and they're towards the bottom of the division. I have no good feel for them.
So Darius looked it up. Penix is not playing in the preseason game tonight, nor will Cousins, I guess. So they're just going with 3rd and 4th string quarterbacks. I don't understand having a young QB who has barely played in the league and not feeling like the exercise of game reps could be beneficial. There are plenty of QBs where if you say, this guy doesn't need to play, I would understand it. Now, Andy Reid values the preseason, so Patrick Mahomes actually does play as the best quarterback in the league, who's been in the same offense with some of the same weapons like Travis Kelce for years. Jared Goff in Detroit's another good one. I know they have a new play caller, and it's a little bit different this year, but it's basically the same offense with the same head coach and the same weapons around him, and he's been there for 4 years. If they didn't want to play Jared Goff in the preseason, it wouldn't be my decision, it wouldn't be my cup of tea, but I would understand it. Michael Penix played 3 games at the end of last year and was very uneasy in those 3 games. I happen to have a high opinion of the player, but it wasn't like he was great. Teams that don't give young guys a chance, ask Dave Canales if he regrets what he did with Bryce Young last year. He has talked about it publicly. He wishes that they wouldn't have treated him as if he'd arrived, that he didn't need that time, because it ended up being that he realized in this new offense, man, oh man, did he need more reps. Now, Zach Robinson's back. It's the same OC. It's the same play caller. So maybe it's slightly different, not quite analogous to Bryce Young with Dave Canales last year. But are you young? Have you started single-digit games in the league? Play in the preseason. I'm not asking you to play 4 quarters. I don't need you to do designed runs and get blown up in the middle of the field. But just go out and throw a few passes. It shouldn't be that big of an ask.
And remember, last year, Penix didn't play in the preseason. He just played that one series versus the Dolphins in their first preseason game.
Good point.
And he didn't play at all the rest of the preseason.
And I don't think Kirk did at all.
No, Kirk didn't play at all.
Which, by the way, he would tell you, I'd imagine, was also not beneficial. Because they found out in week 1 when the Steelers whooped their butt up front that he couldn't really move. Like, it might have been good intel for his offensive coordinator.
It might have been fun to know that.
Going into that game, hey, we got to get him away from T.J. Watt.
Yeah, this dude can't step into throws, FYI.
Like, you know how you find that out? By having a guy play in a preseason game. But Titans-Falcons tonight is game 1, 7 East time, and then 10 Eastern for the Chiefs and the Seahawks. Another team that I think is really hard to predict, we can get into this a little bit later on, the Chicago Bears. I was high on the Bears coming into camp. Everything's been so negative about Caleb Williams and how he looks that now I'm starting to hedge a lot. Like, I was actually leaning toward the Bears are actually going to open the season possibly with a week 1 win. And now I'm thinking, I don't know if I could pick them to get a victory. Their week 1 game is Monday Night Football against the Vikings. So it's J.J. McCarthy in Minnesota on the road at Soldier Field, his first career start. But the vibes aren't good right now. And some of this gets overblown. I know how it works, having been out there, that you're just observing something in a practice and everyone acts like it's gospel. But you can't tell me you feel the same good about the Bears as you did a month ago.
Over under 8.5 wins in that division? Doesn't that seem like they're in decent company with some of the teams that are in that 8.5 window,
I like that.
Right?
I would have taken the over a month ago. A month ago, yeah. Right there, 8-9 wins feels right. They're very talented. You're in year 2 of a 1-1 pick, and you've got an offensive savant coming over to work with them. There's a lot to like about the Bears. Their defense is pretty good. If their offense doesn't stink, they're kind of the antithesis of Washington, I think. Defense isn't as good as the Commanders' offense, but the idea would be defense is going to keep you in games. Mm-hmm. The offense isn't bad. You'll win your fair share of games. But who's had a more damaging few weeks in terms of,
rep or vibe, whatever you call it?
Reps. Being reported as going badly than Caleb Williams. And I got to keep telling myself this doesn't matter that much. Mm-hmm. But it's still just little by little, it breaks away at how you feel about a team, for sure. He's Danny. I'm Grant. You are listening to The Fan. Top of the hour, I want to get into Dan Quinn and what he might be saying about Terry McLaurin next time he speaks after what Cliff Kingsbury said today. But next, a poll of former NFL players, pretty interesting findings on whether or not they regret their career with the issues they're suffering from post-playing days. That's next.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station this Wednesday on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Nats are at home this weekend against the Philadelphia Phillies. First pitch tonight, 6:45. We've got pregame with Charlie and Dave coming up at 6:15. They'll look for a second straight win over the Phillies. I know Toby was at the game yesterday, said he overheard somebody saying, oh, you can't lose to the Nationals. They're bottom feeders. It would make me so happy.
Wouldn't it be a shame?
They're battling with the Mets for the top of the NL East. Just to take 3 out of 4 from Philadelphia when the Nats are at rock bottom. Oh, that would be sweet.
I will tell you, all the Philly fans leaving last night, and there were plenty of them as they're walking by the toaster oven in left field.
What was the attendance?
Just under 22,000.
Okay. Subtract that number by 4,000. That's how many Phillies fans there were there last night.
They were not gruntled last night. They were...
Too bad.
Yeah, it's a shame.
You hate to see that.
You just hate to see it.
Jacob Young, bobblehead. If you're looking at the 106.7 The Fan YouTube stream right now, they're giving away... This is the second batch of Jacob Young bobbleheads this weekend. I grabbed one for my little guy. Jacob Young's his favorite player. At true story, unrelated to the bobblehead giveaway, which I didn't know about, 6:05 this morning, he jumped on top of me. That's how he wakes me up.
This is your son, not Jacob Young.
Correct. It'd be weirder if Jacob Young did that.
It's like, what's up, Grant?
GP, how are you, man? How'd you get in, Jacob? 6:05 this morning, my son jumps on top of me. Normally a knee right to an area you don't want a knee.
Yeah, that's the son specialty right there.
Today, somehow he missed that area. First time ever. Just a knee to the stomach. It was like, ooh. And he said, this is how he started the morning. Dad, dad, dad. 4 times. Yes. How old is Jacob Young? I said, I don't know, probably 27. He thought that was way too old. He was right. I looked it up. He's 26.
Mm-hmm.
That's how our day started.
He's like, no, that's not right, Dad.
Are you in on the multiple opportunities to get the same bobblehead thing? So they make more of them, I guess, and then they give them out. I'm assuming it's just a ploy to have more dates where people might want to go to games. Like, they gave out these bobbleheads on, I think it was August 2nd, and now they're doing it again over this homestand.
I think it's a little odd, but I'm not anti. So, in other words, I want people who are going... who buy tickets and are, you know, part of the thing to get something.
I agree.
You know what I mean? So, like, the more you want to do stuff, do stuff.
So my idea, though, would be do 2 bobbleheads.
Yeah.
So do Jacob Young on the second and then do C.J. Abrams this time. Like,
which I get.
Same bobblehead twice. Fine, I guess, but just give me more bobbleheads.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, this is me spitballing, and I'm talking directly from my hind parts here. I have no idea about anything, and I want that to be very clear before I start saying any more words. I don't know anything. Let's say I run the company and you're like, hey man, we want to order, I'm making up a number, 20,000 bobbleheads. Like, well, you could do 25 for very little, much or not much more expense. But if you want to do a second run of bobbleheads, aka like a different bobblehead, that's a whole new set of costs, whereas it's butt cheap to do a few thousand more.
That's possible.
You can do 2.
I don't know anything. It's very possible.
I mean, I know so little.
I wanted to bring this up, so let's crowbar this in really quickly. Former NFL retirees were polled about basically their state of their current life and also whether or not they're glad that they played in the NFL. From ESPN, the NFL players who are entering retirement age are more likely, according to the polling, to be living with chronic pain or disability, more depressed and anxious, and far more likely to report having some type of cognitive decline than the average American man, a new survey found.
Yeah.
I don't think that's surprising. This game is so violent. Even if you emerge somehow without any damage to your brain or your head or any trauma mentally, right? Physically, it takes a toll. You're getting into 27 car crashes every Sunday for several years, right? Here's what I found notable, though. In spite of that, the vast majority say they would do it all over again and that playing football had a positive effect on their lives. The findings, a result of a survey conducted by ESPN and an independent health policy research, polling a news organization. So this is my big takeaway from that. What I have said for a long time now on CTE and kind of the data we have is that the crime was, figuratively, maybe literally, I don't know, but the issue was when players were lied to and they didn't have the information. We are past that, though, where we're going to get more information as we go, and as we get it and it gets unearthed, players should constantly be given it in real time as fast as possible. There should be no hiding of anything. But comparative to 10 years, 20 years, 30 years ago, players are smarter now about what they are opting into. The head trauma that could come with playing in the NFL, the damaging physical and mental issues that they could have long after their playing career, and they are choosing to be paid very handsomely for this. Different than, but analogous to, somebody who's like cleaning windows outside right now. That's a dangerous job.
Yep.
If you're on a skyscraper cleaning windows, you get paid accordingly. You know when you show up. You don't expect when you get to the office that you're going to be working in a food truck handing out ice cream cones, right? You
on know, the ground. Yeah.
Right? You know you're climbing up high and you're on...
Those high ones too, huh?
The buildings.
Okay.
But my point is, yeah. like these players now know what they're signing up for. And mm-hmm. in this case, these guys are going, yes, I have this disability. Yes, my leg is no longer functioning. Yes, I have this problem. But I would do it again. And especially with the money now, guys should be allowed to make this choice. Mm-hmm. You have to provide the information. And if you want to be Chris Borland, who retired after, I think, one football season year with two, the 49ers yeah. or whatever, you're allowed to do that. That is, you should constantly be figuring out for yourself, is the juice worth the squeeze? But this idea of football needs to go away, or we need to protect the players, or not let them do this or that, or get this out of the game, or let's not... I think it's like anything else. You've got to acknowledge the risks, tell correctly, don't lie, people that are opting in, here's what you're going to make and what you get out of this positively. Here's what could happen negatively. That's a choice you get to make. And I just think generally in life, I'm a believer in, you're a grown-up at this point. You get to make that decision. And so I kind of love the results of this, not the part where these people are dealing with real issues, but where they go, and oh, by the way, I wouldn't change anything. That's kind of, to me, cementing how I felt for a long time.
I think that's all fair. The only extra thing I would add on to that is my supplemental thing is, in addition to not lying to people in terms of the information, which they did for a long time, by the way, further, the NFL should have done more and should continue to do more for guys that, you know, maybe you're not the Ring of Honor player, the Hall of Famer, the 10-year guy, the 12-year guy. There should be way more aftercare for these guys, given what they're signing up for.
No doubt about that. Grant and Danny on the Fan. We will win off the field on this Friday at 3:45.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station this Wednesday on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.